Welcome to the ADAA podcast on anxiety and cardiovascular health. Today we're talking with Dr. Carl Levy, who practices cardiology and internal medicine at the John Ochsner Heart and Vascular Institute, and he's the professor of medicine at the Ochsner Clinical School, the University of Queensland School of Medicine in New Orleans, Louisiana. The first question I'd like to ask you, Dr. Levy, is what is the link between anxiety and other psychological stress for patients with cardiovascular disease, and does it affect mortality?
Well, yes, Jane. Certainly many patients who have depression will have other abnormalities of psychological stress. There's a big overlap between depression, anxiety, hostility, and total amount of psychological stress. But all of these factors seem to be related with an increased cardiovascular risk. Certainly, if you look at studies and acceptance in the literature, probably there is more acceptance of the role depression is playing than the role of anxiety. But there are studies for a decade in the literature showing an increased risk of cardiovascular disease associated with anxiety. And if you just look at the past 6 months, there have been several studies in the literature. One is published in the Archives of General Psychiatry. It's by Martins. It's from the Heart and Soul study of 1,015 patients who had coronary heart disease who were followed for 5.6 years. And they showed that those who had evidence of anxiety had a 62% increase in the risk of cardiovascular disease. And then when they adjusted for other factors, it was a 72% increase. So tremendous increased risk. Two papers in our major cardiology journal, JACC, Journal of American College of Cardiology, which is considered our top clinical cardiology journal, were published also about 6 months ago in the same issue. One was by Jansky, a Swedish study of about 50,000 young people between the age of 18 and 20, and they tested them for depression and anxiety using the ICD-8 code. And then they followed them for 37 years, so into mid-adulthood. In that study, they actually found no increased risk with depression, but anxiety was associated with 2.2 and 2.5-fold, respectively, increases in the risk of total cardiac events and myocardial infarction. So tremendous increases. Another study that was in the same issue of Journal of American College of Cardiology was a meta-analysis of 20 studies of 250,000 patients and showed a 26% increase in cardiovascular disease associated with anxiety. So there, I think there's tremendous evidence that anxiety plays a role in cardiovascular disease. Probably the effect of anxiety is probably more strongly related to acute events and maybe even sudden cardiac death as opposed to other cardiac events. But there's some evidence that anxiety plays a role in many aspects of cardiovascular disease.
Do we know what causes the link or what the mechanism is that causes it?
Well, there are many, many possibilities that certainly patients who are more anxious may have other adverse traits. I mean, they may be substance abuse. They may be less likely to follow diets and follow their physician's advice. There are also some things that anxiety and other forms of psychological stress do that are bad for the cardiovascular system to begin with. Things like releasing hormones and chemicals like catecholamines and adrenaline that raise heart rate and raise blood pressure, that make the blood more sticky by increasing platelet reactivity. Releasing cortisol that has adverse effects, releasing insulin that has adverse effects, and many of these factors all end up having adverse effects on endothelial function, which is the final common denominator in particularly coronary heart disease and many aspects of cardiovascular disease. Certainly there's evidence in short and long-term studies that acute and chronic stress, and this would be true with acute and chronic anxiety, have some of these significant adverse effects. One of the things that is overlap with almost all of the psychological risk factors is abnormalities in the autonomic nervous system. What happens is there's an increased sympathetic tone and a reduction in parasympathetic tone, and that's usually bad for cardiovascular health.
So stressing out is bad for my health, for my heart, in other words. And if that's true, should I worry if I'm studying for exams that are particularly stressful or dealing with teenage kids?
Well, I think that, you know, in a perfect world, we would have no stress. But no one can get totally away from stress. And so if you ask patients, do you have a lot of stress? Almost everyone says yes. Now, that's different, though, than if you do validated questionnaires. So many of the people who would say that they answer yes to a yes-no answer, do you have a lot of stress, they'd answer yes. But when they do a validated questionnaire, they don't meet the criteria for anxiety. They don't meet the criteria for depression and hostility. They still feel that they have a stressful day. Because many parts of our day are stressful. Driving to work in the morning in the traffic is stressful. You know, going to, you know, many aspects of the job, dealing with, you know, as a clinician, dealing with unhappy patients, unhappy families, unhappy colleagues, you know, can be stressful. Tough schedules, you know, taxing work hours, sleep deprivation. Almost everyone has some of that. But many of these same people that say that they have all those things don't meet the validated criteria. So basically, there's stress and there's real stress. There, you know, people that really have significant stress and meet the criteria for anxiety, those people have way higher risk than the people who just have the typical day-to-day things that all of us have.
So to find out if they do meet the criteria, they have to come seek professional help, other than just saying, I'm stressed.
I think that would be generally true, that you need to, you know, someone to do a validated instrument on you, or someone who is skilled at asking the right questions and putting it into perspective. Now, you know, honestly, if someone had access to a certain questionnaire, one might be able to do the questionnaire himself and get a score, you know, and that could work too. And, you know, I think that the problem is that still someone has to have guidance of what to do. It's hard to know how to use information and what to do with it.
Okay. In general, women have more anxiety than men. So does this become an issue more for women? We think of men as having more heart attacks. Is there any truth to any of that?
Certainly women develop heart disease typically later than men. And typically we say that women develop heart disease about 10 to 15 years later than men for various reasons. And that has to do with hormones. It has to do with with menopause. But if you actually look at total amount of cardiovascular disease in the year 2010, women had more cardiovascular disease than men did. And more women died of cardiovascular disease in 2010 than men. Now, part of that is if you age corrected, that's because women are older and they live a little bit longer than men on average too. But I think that it's got to be recognized that the leading cause of death in women is cardiovascular disease. If you ask women, what are you more concerned about? More women will say they're concerned about cancer, and especially breast cancer. But if you look at what kills women, it's cardiovascular disease. It's heart attacks and strokes. And so really, women should be worried about cardiovascular disease. So all of the adverse psychological factors that affect cardiovascular disease, the anxiety, the depression, you said anxiety is higher in women, but depression is certainly also higher in women. Probably hostility is higher in men than in women, but anxiety and depression are probably higher in women than in men, and so that is having adverse effects on their health. And again, just because they don't have as much at age 40, cardiovascular disease, as a 40-year-old man, that doesn't mean that a woman doesn't have an awful lot of cardiovascular disease, because in Western society, in the United States, cardiovascular disease is by far the number one killer.
Let's talk about treatment, if you can address what kinds of treatments are beneficial for the heart as well as for anxiety and depression, assuming you're treating everything as a whole.
Well, the one treatment that it's a treatment that I deal with a lot as a cardiovascular disease specialist. Again, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and so I'm not primarily dealing as my primary focus with these guys. People aren't coming to see me because of anxiety or depression. They're coming to see me because either they have cardiovascular disease, or they're at risk of cardiovascular disease, or they think they may have cardiovascular disease. But the one thing that I think we should be doing as general doctors, family physicians, internists, cardiovascular disease specialists, but certainly in the psychiatric field, psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, all the people who deal with psychiatric or psychologic disorders should be doing is stressing physical activity and exercise training. One of the best things that we can do to reduce psychological stress is regular physical activity and exercise training. In fact, we've shown in numerous studies, probably about 20 studies in the literature that I have personally performed as either an author or co-author, especially looking at our cardiac rehabilitation patients, which are patients with known coronary heart disease who are in the rehabilitation process. We have shown that following a formal exercise training program, and which results in improvements in cardiorespiratory fitness, that our patients can have 40 to 60% reductions in the prevalence of depression, anxiety, and hostility. And moreover, we've shown that patients who have, especially, we've looked at especially depression, we actually have looked at anxiety and hostility, but we haven't published, we've published papers in showing anxiety and hostility markedly improve with cardiac rehabilitation. We haven't actually looked at the mortality of that in our own population, but we've looked at depression in our population and shown that those who remain depressed have somewhere between 3- and 5-fold increases in mortality. And that can be markedly reduced by 70% following cardiac rehabilitation and exercise training, as long as they get at least mild improvements in exercise capacity and cardiorespiratory fitness. And so one of the things that we can really do to not only reduce the symptoms of psychological distress, including anxiety, is become more physically active and exercise. And that probably also translates into reductions in stress-related mortality risk.
Yeah, that one we do know. Do you have any tips as a cardiologist or guidelines on how much a good exercise regimen might be to prevent?
Well, the national guidelines, and this is true for the American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology, and American College of Sports Medicine, the U.S. government, every national organization has recommended that all people should be doing 30 minutes of exercise on most days. And so, as a general rule, that's a minimum recommendation. In our society, considering the obesity epidemic, the diabetes epidemic, the amount of fast food that we have and the things that we have to overcome, all basically secondary to weight gain in adult life and obesity and its related problems, I think many people probably should be trying to do 45 minutes on many days of some form of physical activity. Now, it doesn't have to be killer workouts. It doesn't have to be getting at the level of running road races. It can just be a fast walk. It can be doing a brisk, you know, walk on an elliptical machine or doing the equivalent on a bicycle. Or, you know, for people that have access to pools, that's an excellent form of exercise. I think it's probably not practical for many people because, one, you have to have a pool. And even if you have a pool, many people don't have a skillful swimming stroke to be able to do 45 minutes of swimming. But swimming for people who have a decent swimming stroke and aren't fighting the water the whole time is an excellent exercise because it's so good on the joints. I think the practical for most people is just to get out and walk, either outside or on a treadmill, or for people that have orthopedic limitations where they can't walk because of their knees or their back or their hips, many of those people can do an elliptical machine or a bicycle. And it doesn't have to be a killer workout, 30 to 45 minutes at a moderate pace. A good way to define a moderate pace is that if you use a 0 to 10 scale, 0 being how tired you feel just sitting in the chair, 10 would be the fatigue that you'd feel at the most exercise that you can imagine doing, sprinting for as long as you possibly can till you're about to fall out. That would be a 10. Well, what you should feel when you're exercising is that you should rate your perceived exertion in a scale of about 5 to 7. Another way to look at that is that if you're exercising, if somebody came up to you to talk, you should be able to talk to them for a few minutes. If you can't talk to them, you're exercising too hard. If you can just sit and chat for the whole 45 minutes, you're probably not exercising hard enough. That would be a good, simple way to get a level of intensity that is giving you the cardiovascular benefits and still is safe and effective.
So this is good for prevention for those of us who don't have an identified cardiovascular issue, as well as for treating people who have this?
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, again, our particular studies have been in patients who have already established cardiovascular disease, but there are many studies in the literature that show the benefits of exercise training, physical activity, or cardiorespiratory fitness. And you might say, well, that's all the same thing. Well, people can measure physical activity by a questionnaire or by putting a pedometer on you. People can measure exercise training by asking you how many exercise sessions do you do per week and grade the exercise sessions. And then somebody can put you on a treadmill and actually measure how fit you are and either do a fancy treadmill a simple treadmill by just looking at the speed and incline that you can get up to, or really you can precisely measure it by hooking you up to a cardiopulmonary machine and measuring your oxygen consumption and measuring what's called peak VO2 or peak oxygen consumption, which is the absolute best way to measure cardiorespiratory fitness. And all of those show a little bit different results, but basically, whether you look at physical activity, amount of exercise training, or cardiorespiratory fitness, all of them are associated with reductions in stress and reductions in overall cardiovascular morbidity and mortality.
Good. Thank you, Dr. Levy. Those are words to live by. And this is Jean Kaplan-Tycho for ADAA.